Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on April 22nd, 2015. I'm Ira Ruler of Time, and joining me as always is Rolo T. Chris, how are you doing?
Do, 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 do. Can we change this to a weekly Game of Thrones podcast instead? Do, 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 but that's the theme song already. Do, 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 podcast. Do, 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 do.
Weekly podcast, weekly podcast. No.
Game of Thrones and sometimes manga, mostly Game of Thrones. Do 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 do.
No.
Aww.
I never keep up with TV. I like watch it in chunks, so I would no.
Do you watch Game of Thrones though?
I have watched the first four seasons. I haven't watched any of season five.
Okay, so this is just a case where you're like, I don't want to do it because I'm not going to see season five until after it's over. You know
pretty
what
much,
I mean?
Yeah.
How can you possibly? It feels like the most, like considering how pop culturally relevant and like on fire that series is right now, how do you do that without having everything spoiled?
I don't know.
Because I was like 2 seconds away from just being like, Davos blows Stannis and shoots his own face off. I was like, whoa!
mostly, I don't really care when I do get spoiled. That's all.
Oh, wow. You're braver than
I guess it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know, not to like superstition it or anything, but I guess if you're, like, really paranoid about not being spoiled, then you just jinx yourself, and you end up stumbling across something anyway. If you just go about your life not really caring, and then you find out, it's like, oh, man, Joffrey died at the second episode of season four. And it's like, okay, I guess that'll happen whenever I watch it.
See, I'm the opposite way. I'm paranoid even of shit that I probably should. I unfollowed Gav on Twitter because I didn't want to risk him spoiling Age of Ultron for me because he gets it a week early. And I may remember to follow him back, I don't know, but at this moment I feel like this is a good decision.
Don't take any risks with you.
I can't.
Limey asshole.
That shady Brits fucked me over once before. He ruined the end of Guardians of the Galaxy. Not like the actual end of the movie, but the shitty post-credit scene. Fuck him anyway.
With Groot?
No, with the duck.
Oh yeah, with Howard, yeah.
Yeah. He ruined that for me.
That kind of stuff's like everyone's just like, oh my god, you guys have to see the thing. Well, shut the fuck up then.
I forget how he did. He did it in like the worst way. I forget. It was like, what a. He posted like a tweet. It was like, oh, isn't this like a ducky finale or something like that? And I don't know. He posted something like that was like a duck related, like, pun, but it wasn't intentional, and then he was like, oops, guess I kind of just accidentally spoiled the end. I was like, you didn't originally, but now you have, you fuck!
Oh, man.
Oh. But yes, we,
That'd be like if I talked about this week's chapter of My Hero Academia, and I was like, man, what a hot finish to this chapter. Oh, fuck! I just spoiled it accidentally.
Yeah.
Like, no one would really understand me if I...
I'd be like, if you had just finished there, I'd have been like, after I saw it, I'd be like, oh, was that a pun he was attending? And you could have taken credit for it, too, at that point. You'd have been like, yes, it was. I'm very clever and subtle. But...
And that's the second thing. Don't point out when you make a pun, guys.
Yeah.
Come on. Alright. Anyway, we do have a manga to talk about, aside from My Hero Academia and, I don't know, Howard the Duck. Does Howard the Duck have a manga? Maybe.
He,
I don't fucking know.
He probably does, if you look far enough back.
So, anyhow, Spirit Circle. This is something that we began reading several weeks ago, but assorted delays prevented us from getting it done until now, about 3 weeks later. As far as you know, because I think that, Chris, in a past life, we actually met and talked about this series.
Oh, really?
Yes.
On our alternate version of Weekly Manga Recap, our alternate reality version?
Yes. We are, I assume, destined to meet in various different ways in the assorted forms that we've been reincarnated into, but we always have a manga podcast.
Oh, I can't wait till we get to the reality where we're both chicks. That's gonna be so cool.
Essentially, this is a story about this kid named Futa. He's this teenager, and he can see ghosts. He's just always been able to see them. And I love how, like, it's not some, like, dark secret of his or anything like that. His dad keeps on bugging him about if he's seen ghosts and stuff because he's told him this. He's like, did you see any ghosts today? Are there any ghosts in here right now? What have you been talking to them about? He's his dad's such a dork.
His dad's the biggest nerd. Like, his dad's just like, there's nothing you need to learn in this world that you can't learn from manga. Like, he's just the supreme dork every time he sees his son.
And then one day, he meets this girl who can also see ghosts, named Coco. And Coco has this big old scar on her forehead, or a birthmark, though. No, it is a scar in that reality, right?
Yes.
And basically, after she sees this weird birthmark that Futa has, it looks sort of like a double helix, I guess. She's like, that is a mark that shows that we are destined to, you know, be enemies. And so basically she says, we have this shared history going back through our previous lives. And she, at first, essentially forces him to start experiencing his past lives. And then he starts to go along with it. But she basically says, at the end of this, I have to kill you so that I end the cycle, essentially. And it starts off that way. And it gets really, really weird down the line. And increasingly interesting as it goes along. This is, by the way, I think we've said this a couple of times in the past few weeks, but the same guy who did Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer, which was a series that we covered 2 years ago? At least more than a year ago, I think.
I think that has to be only two, I think.
And we both really liked that series. And so knowing that was the same creator going into this one, I kind of have some pretty good expectations. And I was not disappointed in this series. In fact, I like this series better than I like Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer.
Really?
I really like this series.
Okay.
So I'll just say that up front. I'm going to be very positive about this. And, yeah. I don't really know how we're going to start going through this, because it's one of those things where it's like, unless you kind of just... I really do not know how we're going to talk about this, what angle to first approach it from, but there's so much about that I want to talk about. So.
Well, I guess the best way to kind of get into this is defining exactly what this series is, and it's sort of a mystery series combined with sort of just a drama slash... Basically, if you read Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer when we did it, essentially just consider adding like a dash of 20th Century Boys into it, just to add a layer of mystery behind things. It still has a lot of the same themes.
No horror stuff.
No horror stuff. But it still has a lot of the same themes that Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer did, especially when it comes to nihilistic love. The mangaka seems to have a very interesting perception of what he finds to be the most romantic form of love, and it usually tends to center around the end of the world or just some sort of weird death-related thing. But it then chronicles this kid reliving his past lives and then applying those past lives to the current situation as this world, this truth starts to slowly pile more details into it. It's a monthly series, and it's actually not all that long. It's currently ongoing. If you have a Crunchyroll subscription, which is where we have Fairy Tail on, you actually have access to every chapter of Spirit Circle. All 33 chapters that are out right now are on it. You can read them. But in those 33 chapters, and it's a monthly series, it's actually not done yet, but I feel like there can't be too much more, because this is one of those series that puts a specific point on itself and how much it can do. It establishes early on there's seven lives for him to relive. And I thought that meant, all right, we're going to really start pacing this out after they get through the first two. No, there's like usually like one, two chapters in between. He's like smack his face with that fucking hula hoop again. Like, I want to know the next one. Boom. And he's right into it.
And he gets this tool. Coco has one as well, that it's this large hoop called a spirit circle. And it does two things. One, it can cause, you know, restless spirits to go to heaven / hell. Fucking dogs, I hate them. And the other is that if he gets knocked on the head with one, it allows him to start experiencing one of his lives. And yeah, they've got seven past lives that they've got to go through. Interesting thing is that they don't go in chronological order in the slightest.
No.
Which is one of the things, actually something that I really like about the series. It's kind of sets the cycle of reincarnation on a completely different timeline than, you know, history would have you believe, essentially. And so basically the structure of the series is he gets hit on the head with one of these spirit circles. At first it's Coco's, and eventually when it becomes more voluntary, he just kind of knocks himself on the head with it. And he experiences this past life, which focuses on how he encountered Coco's past life, and then follows them all the way to their death. And then he wakes up after they've died, and they have a little bit of a catch-up with Coco, and then eventually, after a little while, he goes to the next one. Mm-hmm. And the series is about 33 chapters long now, and he is just about to go into his last past life. Mm-hmm. So that gives you an idea of the pace that the series has.
And one of the aspects I think I enjoyed most about, although it didn't get utilized as much as I was hoping it would, is that after he's experienced a past life, that past life stays with him and actually will interact with him when he comes back into the, I don't know, the real world, whatever you want to call it, the pad present, I don't know. But those past lives will actually come with him and interact with him, and they'll, at the start, they're actually trying to tempt him to attack and kill Coco, because some of his past lives hold deep-seated grudges against her.
Well, one of his past lives was a fucking knight who killed Coco, who was a witch, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, not an evil witch, but, you know, well, medieval knight, what do you gotta do?
She fucking, you know,
she weighs the same as a duck, fucking kill her, you know?
Yeah, I'm just like, ooh, she deserved to die. But no, it's actually really interesting to see these ghosts, especially because these are very dramatic and interesting stories. They're going to tug at your heartstrings, assuming you have heart. And if you read Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer, I feel like there were at least some parts of that story that showed you that this author has the capability of doing that. So these short stories give you that. But what I think I enjoy the most is that after those are done, they come back into the present. What's the kid's name?
Futa.
Futa comes back into the present time, and he's the one who's just experienced this, but Coco already has. But when he comes out, right, he basically shares with her the other side of the story, and the two of them basically sit and digest the entire tale between their two characters, and generally it comes out the other end with Coco kind of seeing Futa in a better light because of it, because she can, you know, her character may have been horrifically murdered by him, and she's like, good, I hope you lived a sad, miserable life, and he's like, well, about that, let me kind of tell you what does happen. She usually comes out being like, oh, I guess that really wasn't what I was looking for. But it gives these cool closures to things.
Yeah, it essentially lets them both know, because they have only experienced the story from their side of it. And then once they're able to put the whole thing together, it kind of lets them both know, maybe we were both kind of wrong about this. And it's kind of a shame that things went the way that they did. You know, at first it seems like it's just going to be, wow, all of Futa's past lives kind of did really bad things, because the first one is they're in, like, the time of Aztecs, and Coco is this priestess who leads the sacrificial offering, that's what it is, of essentially Futa's girlfriend from the past. And so after she is killed, you know, Futa's like, fuck this, and, you know, tries to kill them, and she fucking cuts his head off. And so afterwards, Futa says, you know, it's like, man, he was just trying to protect his, you know, love, and you killed him for it. Yeah, well, I did in self-defense, first of all. And secondly, because you fucked everything up, everyone else decided, why do we have to have these, you know, this selection of the sacrifices? Let's just overthrow the priestesses, and we'll just, you know, randomly butcher people as sacrifices to the gods. So you actually caused a whole bunch of other people to die because you were so selfish and reckless. And he's like, oh.
Whoopsie, well, poopsie.
And then the second one is, you know, I was a witch, quote unquote, sure, but I was just trying to help people and cure them, and you ruined everything, so I hope that you die painfully. Actually, I lived a long and happy life, and,
well, it wasn't actually a very happy life.
It wasn't
life.
That happy.
But he lived a pretty, well, not miserable, because he did have fun, but he lived a very debaucherous life for a while, and then happened to basically luck into finding a family at the very end, and he got to die, like, peacefully with his daughter.
Right.
And he, like, tells her that, and she's just like, oh. Well, that's good for you, then, I guess.
So, yeah, it basically forces them to see each other as these much more rounded personalities than just, you know, the enemy or this ignorant person or that dumb bitch and so on and so forth. And because of that, they come to understand each other, and the story gradually turns into this romantic tale between the two of them, because despite the fact that Coco has vowed to kill Futa, she, in spite of that, actually starts to return his feelings that he seemingly has had for the entire series of love and affection. And there's this great line that she has at one point when Futa has just fallen out of the influence of one of these guys, of one of his past lives, which is, you know, it actually makes it easier when you are still under that influence, because you, Futa Okada, are a good person, and it's kind of suck that I'm going to have to kill you. All your past lives, though, you know, makes it easier for me to want to kill you.
Yeah. Your past lives, you were pretty much an asshole in all of them, but, yeah, when you come out of it, you're kind of an okay guy, I guess. Yeah. What's also interesting is that the series has big ideals on reincarnation. It's not just these people who have been living the same lives over and over again.
It's like everyone Futa knows.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, has he met that mailman? Well, don't worry, in ancient Egypt, he also met that mailman, but that mailman was a god. Like, it's just, they always show up in different ways.
It's not all of them all the time.
Yeah, and it's never the exact same role each time. Sometimes his friends are actually kind of antagonists to him, or sometimes they're people he barely interacts with. There's usually the same bond there. Usually if he meets one of his friends, even if it's just in passing, they'll just be like, wow, I just, like, you seem like a really cool dude. Like, yeah, you seem awesome as well. And then, you know, it'll pass on, and then they'll just be like, I don't know why, but that dude seemed like a really cool guy. But it's just cool to see them in different environments, because sometimes his friends are his parents. Sometimes his friends are his kids, you know? And it's just showing the different ways he has these strong relationships with these characters. And it's weird, because the characters themselves aren't necessarily all that fleshed out outside of, you know, our main leads. But I guess seeing them in these different roles and seeing them have these different relationships, but the same kind of feelings generated towards them, towards Futa and Coco, kind of make it really interesting.
Mm-hmm. This was also, at times, a very funny series, too. You know, it's that same sense of humor that was in Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer, but because everything is, in general, meant to be this very dramatic relationship between these, primarily just these two characters, there's not as much comic relief, I don't think. But when it's there, I think it's really funny. Like, there's a bit where Futa, I forget how he does it, but he, like, hurts his leg. And so he shows up, and he's got, like, this kind of sprained ankle or something along those lines. And so his friends are approaching about it, and his really tall friend is like, yeah, you can ride around on my shoulders. And he's like, no. I don't want to do that. And this girl who has a crush on him is like, I can kiss it and make it better. And she's like, no, back off. And one of his friends then says, what if we bend it back the other way? No, don't do that! And then his final friend is this judo girl, and she says, I have this new throw I want to practice. What is wrong with you? I am injured.
it's a very cool series that way, and it works at its best in the fact that it keeps developing on top of itself, because the way he goes through these past lives, even though they aren't in chronological order, they all seem to follow after the previous one for the most part. There's one that's the original life, that's the one we haven't gotten to yet.
Yes.
But everything else, like, in one aspect, one of his friends is actually a vicious alcoholic, and that's actually what causes him to die. And when he meets that character in another life, it's actually a big thing of convincing that character to stop drinking, which then leads to who that character is in the present. And he's a straight-laced guy now. He's, you know, very studious, and it's just kind of interesting to see that stuff slowly develop over the course of these stories.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm actually really frustrated that we decided to cover the series when we did, because
we have waited a couple weeks?
Well, not a couple of weeks, probably, you know, like half a year, but because basically what we've been told, or what's been hinted at so far, is that the original life, Futa's original life, who actually created the spirit circles and seemingly did stuff to set these events in motion, he did something seemingly really fucking bad. like, we see memories from, like, Coco's perspective of him having set fire to this village, it looks like, and killing a whole bunch of people. And it's just like, what happened? Tell me what happened! And I can't talk about that.
I think you'll have to wait until next week to find out.
What do you mean next week?
Next month, whatever. You know what I mean. Get used to it.
It's torturing me. Because I like this series so much, and don't know what happens yet. I've actually got to keep up with this series from here on out, because...
It's somewhat interesting to me, because there's a point in this series, and this series reminds me a lot of Naoki Urasawa in general, the guy behind 20th Century Boys. Mm-hmm. But there was one point in the series that did get slow to me, and that's kind of, I think, what took me a little bit longer. And it's kind of interesting, because there's a series called Billy Bat that Urasawa did, and that series also was, like, a mindfuck, but on, like, a whole nother level of, like, there's a fucking cartoon bat that's, like, the root of all evil that's been showing up through time and, like, talking fucking Lee Harvey Oswald and murdering people. It's really weird. But there's one point in Billy Bat where they, like, go back to a story of, like, these kids who played ninjas with each other, and they get involved in, like, this,
Oh, hello.
Yes. Oh, I'm restarting my laptop. They get involved in this, like, ninja clan's eternal blood feud.
What the fuck?
And it reminded me of the point in this series where I also kind of started to lose it. It was, like, the exact same point where they just get involved in some, like, fucking... feudal ninja land storyline, and I was
the samurai story.
Yeah, that's where I was starting to lose a little bit of my steam with
this. That one does go a little long. If I recall correctly, essentially Futa is the bastard son of the previous feudal lord. His sister is the princess who is on good terms with him, and his brother is the asshole who was also his asshole brother in a previous life. And then Coco shows up and delivers, like, an ultimatum to the asshole brother. So then her troops start to invade. And so the princess has to escape with Futa and a ninja and an old samurai guy. And then Coco and Futa have this sword fight where they each cut off one of each other's hands and feet. And then they, like, get washed away down a river. And then granddaughter and grandfather or some shit like that discover them and start nursing them back to health, and they're like, yeah, you guys, your fighting is over, so why don't you just, like, you know, settle down and have a family? And they're like, what? Like, the only reaction that is appropriate to such a ridiculous suggestion. And then they're like, somehow become friends after trekking a mile on one foot and one arm, and it's a really weird story.
But it all kind of, it still had...
It has a good ending, though, because, like, they basically find out in the present that the princess and the ninja essentially, like, had kids together and got to live happily ever after. And Futa is so happy to hear this, he starts just crying in front of his friends. And it's like, aww.
Yeah, that's also a really cool aspect of it, is these characters have such a deep attachment to their past selves that when they learn something after the fact... it helps them out a great deal. There's one story we haven't talked about really yet, and that's actually one that kind of plays with the narrative a bit, because it actually takes place in the future, or what we think is the future. And it has this ending to it that is very bleak and miserable, mm-hmm. but they find something out afterwards, and it's so relieving to them. Like, it's completely turned their perception of how things ended on its head. And they're just so ecstatic because of it. And it creates this cool bond between them, because they're the only people who can share it with one another. They can't explain it to somebody else without it, you know, making no sense, because they're the ones who are living through these moments together. So it's very cool. Even though they're not going through the memories at the same time, by being in it, they're both experiencing it at the same time, essentially, in a way. They're sharing the past together.
Mm-hmm. And it's the fact that basically they kind of go on this spiritual journey together, and that kind of forces their relationship to change over time, that makes the main dramatic hook of the series so interesting, is that it's not just, you know, this type of relationship between the two characters could be done so simply and so bluntly, but it's not. It's handled so much better than it could be. And, yeah.
I think, on a whole, I really enjoyed this series. It's still not perfect to me. There's still parts that I was a little bit, you know, there's parts where I think the story just drags a little bit. And I do think that the manga's message sometimes is very, very enclosed in the way it's thinking. Like, it's very much like, this is the way things are, I feel, at times. It has a very straight, it has its idea of how reincarnation, the world, and all that works. And it's not to say that's a problem, it's just one thing that I noticed about it. But it does deal with some really cool themes. It deals heavily with reincarnation, with life, death, the actual value of a human life, of a human soul, what defines a human life. Very cool things like that. And I think, to that extent, I would highly recommend this series, especially if you already like Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer. If you enjoyed that when we read it a couple years back, and you haven't read this series yet, I would definitely recommend you give it a try. If you've liked any of the mystery series we've kind of done before, like 20th Century Boys and series like that, I definitely think this would be right up your alley as well.
It's such a relief that we've actually gotten a good series to talk about. This is like the first one in like 3 months.
And I'm like, Nick, also, wasn't enough underage nudity for me, so I can't recommend it anymore.
I mean, you know, it's good, but a comic got killed. It had titties. So.
Yeah, there are breasts all over the place there. Fucking clowns raping kids. It was amazing.
I blocked that part out.
Regular tour de force.
So yeah, I think that this is probably my favorite series we've covered so far this calendar year.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, very happy to have gotten to read it. So, very big, strong recommendation for me.
There you go. Yeah, do it. If Nick says so, I mean, come on. Has he steered you wrong before?
I hope not.
Some guy's like, I read Usagi Drop because you weren't harsh enough on it.
I tried.
I'm only one man.
You made me check out Spider-Man out of morbid curiosity. Well, that's your own fucking fault. I talked about, like, every story in that series specifically so no one else would have to read it.
You're just like, here's everything. You don't need anything else. One dude's just like, I don't think you mentioned chapter 4. Maybe it was really good. Click, click, click.
Okay, let's get into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap now. It's going to be a very weird run this time because we have no Bleach, we have no One Piece, we've got 3 chapters of Black Clover and 2 of Fairy Tail, and I'm not sure if Chris is...
Chris
can't follow along with me with the Shonen Jump chapters, which means that Gakuhote the radio play may be canceled for this week.
There'll still be music, I just won't be able... Unless I'm, like, just guessing what the dialogue is, you're just like, Higashide! And I'm like, yeah! Hey there, hot stuff! How's it? What are you doing here, looking so sexy?
And if people come in and it's like, well, why did you just do this? He has tried so much stuff to try and get stuff.
I'm on 3 different devices right now, I'm trying to restart my laptop to see if that'll work. I've tried restarting routers, it's...
And even your phone hasn't succeeded in its download, has it?
No, I restarted my phone as well, and that's trying to get into it.
Well, there will be a little bit of time before Gakuhote. Maybe a miracle will happen. Who knows? Okay, but let's start off with Black Clover. And since Chris is not here to cover this with me, I'm going to just take some liberties and try and summarize these 3 fucking chapters. Last time, Asta seemingly struck the final blow against Lord Heath. And page 8 begins with the revelation that Asta had some ice conjured underneath him, which killed his momentum. Basically, he couldn't plant his feet. And so Heath is able to absorb the blow. It's really weird, because the attacks in this series, they're struck, and they start bleeding from the mouth, but they're struck with sharp objects that do not puncture anything. As far as we can see.
It was interesting. It does take, like, a giant ice pike through the... Well, not through the chest, but, like, it impales him from below. But, yeah, it's just sort of acts like a blunt instrument, and he bounces off it. Like, ow, that really hurt, but did not pierce my skin.
It's like wrestling damage or something. Like, oh, no, my ribs were not crushed by the chair. I just am coughing up blood now. That is all. I'm cool.
I'll get better from it, I swears.
So Asta gets sent flying by this giant icicle thing that Heath conjures, and so he is basically preparing to finish everyone off. Noelle tries to keep everyone shielded with her water wall thing, and Heath is trying to create an opening with his ice powers. Magda gets ready to fight against the guy, and he basically just talks about how lame he is because he has a type advantage against the guy, but the guy's still stronger than him. So,
that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
He has 4x damage and he still can't beat him? Ugh.
Yeah, you'll never believe it, you guys. My Charizard lost to fucking Articuno.
To a fucking Leveny. Like, oh, it's ridiculous.
I don't even know what that is.
I was trying to think of a type that...
That's gotta be a Gen 6 thing. And
No, I think it was Gen 5. Because it's a bug grass. I was trying to think something to Charizard would have a 4x advantage of.
So, Asta, however, jumps back in and tries to attack him again. Another giant icicle knocks him back again, and Asta is just like, I am the stubborn shonen protagonist, you cannot stop me. And then he gives his big old speech, because he says, you know, there is no way you could win, so just give up. And he says, but if I give up, who's going to protect them? I realize that this isn't just to keep a promise. I'm going to become the Wizard King in order to protect everybody. And Magna is inspired by Asta's words. He's like, ah, oh, you're a real man, Asta. And he steps up in order to help him out. He says, I don't know why he says this specifically. If you're gonna off that guy, you gotta get through his superior first, and that'd be me. Okay, buddy. Nice to know. So Magna gets ready to attack, and he says to Asta, hey, remember the baptism! And then casts out a whole bunch of fireballs, like these mini fireballs. Heath shields himself in the front with a bunch of ice crystal stuff, and Asta comes in behind him and uses the blunt end of his cleaver to attack Heath and his minions from behind, and he manages to catch all of them. And Heath notes that the fire on his body is not going out for some reason. Also, Noelle protects everyone from... Oh, the icicles that Heath had also conjured. And she says to Magna, well, you better thank me, you spiky-head delinquent. But internally she's going, yay, I controlled my magic!
I'm the best!
Which is kind of funny. So Heath tries to just freeze the flames off of his body, but Asta comes in one more time and hits him in the shoulder and defeats him, basically. We begin page 9 with Heath falling over defeated. Magna uses his flame powers in order to create these vines on everybody, but one of the minions manages to create this, like, water jet beneath him. He, like, kind of just sits down and rides a wave out to escape. And, let's see. Asta is like, yeah, I won! How do you like that? Yeah! And he falls over unconscious. Then something very strange happens. We get a bit where Noelle's like, you know, he is stupid and obnoxious and a peasant, but he's also rather amazing. Okay. And then fucking an anti-bird just emerges from Asta's cloak.
He's just been hanging out there, I guess, a couple fucking weeks.
Just, like, living there. And it shoots up out of the hood of his cloak, flies into this building, into this church, grabs a stone with, like, the image of moon and stars on it, flies back to Asta, and proceeds to knock him in the head with it in order to wake him up. And apparently they just have this pet now, this anti-bird thing. Just following them around. And Noelle thinks it's adorable.
I mean, she thinks it's really cute. It is pretty adorable, Nick. Let's be fair.
Let's see. Magna tries to interrogate Heath, and Heath is like, nope, not gonna do it. And this magic item they have hidden inside them, like, freezes them all in ice, and then the ice shatters and just presumably kills them all. Because their magic tomes all start to disintegrate. So yeah, okay, they're dead now.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting that this series jumped right into death. Just kind of threw that out there. It actually does respond to it, though, doesn't he? He says something like...
Asta is very upset because they just thrown their lives away, essentially.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the minion who escaped reports to his boss, and they're like, ah, and the Black Bulls have the magic stone. Still, they are nothing. We can do whatever we like with them, whenever we choose. His resurrection is at hand. And there's this big symbol on the wall, a whole bunch of like connecting symbols in a weird pattern.
And it's actually, if I recall, it's the same pattern that the villain in, I want to call it Hail Satan, 666 Satan used, if I recall. And I feel like I saw it in Digimon Frontier once as well with one of the villains there. So I feel like that must be some established symbol.
I forget what it is. It's got something to do, I think, with the way the cosmos are laid out, I guess. And we also get a look at the emblem of that this guy is wearing. It's this sun seemingly rising up over a mountainside behind a castle. And the sun has a face. Yay.
It's a Quilfoth.
Quilfoth?
Q-L-I-P-H-O-T-H. Quilfoth. So it is. A Quilfoth. Of Hermit... Oh, well, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. I'm going to just destroy this. I guess it has some... relevance to
the boss.
Judaism.
And, okay.
I guess it also
representation of evil or impure spiritual forces in Jewish mysticism. The realm of evil is also termed Sitra Akra, the other side, in Kabbalah texts.
Huh. Well, look at that. We learned something today.
I didn't. I've already forgotten it.
Oh, well. Well, no, you did learn something today. You've just already forgotten.
So, this is a boy, I guess, mourning over the old man who contacted them, who was their grandfather, until Asta comes charging on into the graveyard because the anti-bird is pecking at his head, and Noelle is following because she thinks the anti-bird is cute and she wants it. And she's like, even like standing over Asta and being like, come on! I want to play with it, basically. Which, I actually like the idea that she just wants this thing, but it's not interested in her because of her super potent magic. It's like a curse.
Just get away from me!
Then Asta realizes, oh, right, this person is mourning. And, Asta says, you know, the other villagers told me that your grandfather was the only one who stood up to those guys. I'm sure, you know, he was really awesome. And the kid explains how the grandfather had said that he managed to beat the Black Bulls in gambling. And while he never took the test, he would have loved to have become a Magi Knight, and he always regretted not having done so. And he said that he should have worked harder when he was young. And the kid kind of gets all teary-eyed and says, I'm a peasant, but do you think that I could get into the Magic Knights? And Asta's like, of course you can! You know, I'm a peasant, I don't have any magic at all, and I got in. The Magic Knights are kind of weird like that. But you're going to have to work your butt off, because by the time you get into the Magic Knights, I'll be working even harder, even more, and getting closer to being the Wizard King, so I'll be waiting for you, kid. And he punches him in the stomach?
Seemed kind of mean.
Well, he, like, taps his fist against his chest for some reason. I don't know. And then the anti-bird keeps on attacking him. Because. And third and final chapter.
Did you mention, though, that we found out that the group behind the Quilfoth is actually a Golden Dawn, or at least a member of the Golden Dawn?
I pointed out that what their emblem was. Okay. But, yeah.
It's an interesting little aspect. I like these two chapters a bit because they seem to be progressing the plot in a very interesting way. Like, we're already getting this idea of, like, a larger story going on in place here. And it definitely seems to be a pretty huge plot if it's involving the group, Yuma? Yoko.
Which one are you trying to talk about?
Rival guy who always smiles when
magic. Oh, right, him. I've forgotten.
Yuno. I think it's Yuno. He's in the same guild Yuno's in, so it's an interesting aspect to see that there. This third chapter, on the other hand, could have completely done without.
What a fucking filler chapter. So, actually, I do like the beginning, because Yami's like, all right, I heard you guys had a really rough time, but, you know, good job. And Asta's like, yeah, yes, sir! And then they say, yeah, you know, the Magic Investigation Department is trying to examine what the criminals left behind. They haven't done anything yet. There was a pocket watch he left behind, and that seemed pretty valuable. You know, they might be extremists. They could be dissidents from the noble realm and so on and so forth. And then Yami says, oh, and by the way, in recognition of your actions, the Wizard King has awarded us a star. And Asta's like, what does that mean? And Flirty Drunk Girl says, well, the 9 Magic Knight groups compete to see how many stars they can collect. It's an honor thing. The Golden Dawn's at the top right now. They've got 70. And Yami holds the star out, and it goes, and it erases a black star, which is a negative star. They're like, all right, that gives us a nice, even negative 30. That's fucking amazing. And it's like, have this, like, giant wall of demerits hanging on the
bench. It's like the inverse of fucking the Sorting Hat, where it's just bad shit all the time.
But Asta gets his pay, and he's like, oh my god, money! And his eyes do that stupid glinty thing, and I was like, this isn't very much. Whatever, Miss Rich family, who gives a shit. And then Flirty Drunk Girl is like, hey, I'll take you guys shopping to Castle Town, you know, because I'm free. And so they head out, and it's basically like fucking Diagon Alley, you know, and there's all sorts of shopping districts and so on for them to check out. Drunk Flirty Girl has this witch costume with gigantic cleavage. Like, it's a cleavage that goes all the way to her waist, basically, because that's the kind of character she is, I guess. Yep.
I mean, isn't her, like, last name a pun on erotica? Wasn't it, like,
Vanessa? It was something close to that.
It was, like, Vanessa Erotica, or, like, Erosica, or something like that. I feel like it has to be intentional.
Melanie McFan Service. But Vanessa... It is Vanessa. Oh, okay. So Vanessa... Fucking dirt. Oh, she actually says to Noah, oh, you need stuff to control your magic, right? You can get like some magic repressing items here, you know, and so you might even be able to find something that helps you control your magic for the time being until you get better, which that's nice of her. I actually missed that detail because I was just skipping through the boring pages of this. They find that one dude who picked on Asta in the magic test.
I did not know who the fuck this character was.
Neither did I.
3 times I've read this chapter. Still don't really know. I vaguely recall him now. I've listened to the Jump podcast. You've said it right here. I know he was at the entrance exam at some point, but I do not fucking remember this guy.
I'm pretty sure he's the guy that hung out with Asta in order to make himself look good, but then they sparred and Asta kicked his ass.
I thought that was a different guy, because didn't that guy have, like, poison magic, and he was kind of he was kind of establishing himself to be a big asshole.
I don't fucking
know. I feel like Asta wouldn't have been, like, so chummy with the guy.
So, an elderly woman gets robbed and cries thief. What's his name? Uses creation magic to make this weird motorcycle thing, trying to impress Noelle and Vanessa, and they're just like, God, it's so creepy looking and lame and not giving anything.
Hold on, wait. People in our chat room are trying to remind me of this character by saying he's, quote, the angry cum guy.
What?
And apparently at some point we must have made some cum-related anger joke to this character, but I do not remember this.
Seke is his name.
Oh, all right then.
So Second manages to catch up with the thief, but the thief stabs him in the foot with a paralysis knife, which causes him to fall off his motorcycle, and he's like, oh, it's poison, I'm going to die, this is it. Oh, Asta, you're the other one here, so I'm entrusting it to you. You must get to the top. I'm entrusting my dream to you. Oh, such a bad way to die. And then Asta just, like, chops him on the forehead. He's like, live and make your dream come true yourself. Don't you dare give up, you idiot. And then immediately Vanessa comes by and is like, it's just paralysis, poison. You'll be fine in a little while. Just walk it off. Okay, bye, guys.
I was like, is this, like, gonna be him joining fucking the Black Bulls? And he's just like, no, okay, I guess I'm alive.
Bye.
Peace. Thanks for letting me stare at your tits for a while.
Asta returns the old woman's belongings after getting them back from the thief. And they leave, and the magic woman basically gets rid of her disguise magic and reveals himself as the Wizard King. And he's like, oh, he's got magic negation powers. That's really interesting. And then suddenly he's contacted by someone. He's like, what are you doing out here? Oh, I'm just wandering the town looking for new and interesting magic. And like, why? He's like, well, come on. I want to find stuff. Well, this is no time for nonsense. He's like, yeah, whatever. I found somebody interesting. I understand that there's something weird going on. Yeah, I'll head back. And then we get a single panel of Magna in his underwear going, I'm not done yet!
Because
in the chapter, basically.
He was gambling. He lost everything. He's a bad gambler, Nick.
Yes, I get that. It's amazing that someone in the Black Bulls is bad at something.
I like the first two chapters we got this week. I thought they were good. They're progressing the plot in a direction that I find interesting. And it's not to say that I dislike the third chapter. It's just, I don't know who Seiki is. I don't remember. It's the art style in the series I don't like, and his face is like the epitome of what I just turns my brain off when I see it. It's just this very boring looking face. But otherwise, I can grasp like the point of the chapter. Like, here, we're gonna set up the world. Hey, there's magic suppression devices, so we have a way to help Noel. Hey, here's the Wizard King. He's the biggest figure in this series. You know, we're gonna introduce
him. Well, he was introduced during the test. You just didn't really get to know him at all.
Yeah, well, we didn't actually get to see him beyond, like, a figure saying something. So this is like, oh, hey, look, he has an interest in Asta, and he's, you know, he's doing this stuff. So we get...
I like the kind of Odin thing that he does, where he, you know, disguises himself in order to mingle with the people and actually try and find things without drawing attention to himself.
Isn't it a bit cliche, though, that he goes with an old woman having her purse stolen?
It works!
I feel like that should have been, like, come on, he should have come up with something more elaborate.
You're saying that he should have disguised himself as a hot woman in order to draw attention or some shit?
No, just like the old, like, oh no, someone snatched my purse. What kind of standing citizen will help me with this? Like, why wasn't he, like, trying to cross the street bags of groceries or something like that? Like, who will save me? I don't know what I want him to do. Like, oh, somebody help me. Terrorists have attacked this bank and there's an orphanage of children on fire downstairs. Who will save us?
Wait. A bank was attacked by terrorists who robbed it, didn't commit terrorism, and the bank is above an orphanage,
yes,
which is on fire, but the bank is not on fire.
The bank's fine. And the orphanage maybe itself isn't on fire. It's the children who are on fire right now. So they'd like you to save the children first, but the orphanage, you're probably going to have to, too, because they're going to light it on fire eventually. Those kids are klutzes.
Okay. Fairy Tale. Double chapter time.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. We start...
4 issues of double chapters.
We start this off with an announcement that, for whatever reason, I don't know, I guess fucking... Hero found another hour in his day that he could fucking draw fairy. Because he's not just doing Fairy Tale. He's doing Fairy Tale. He has Fairy Tale Zero. I think there's like another fucking series.
Fairy Tale like Ice Trail or something
that. He has a magazine he oversees. I think there's like something called Fairy Girls I heard about. Like there's so much shit he's doing. And he's still like, I need to do another chapter a week with color pages for the next 4 weeks during what's actually a pretty not interesting time of the series. It's insulting, Nick. One Piece does something amazing, fucking goes on break. This shit happens, and we get twice as much of it for 4 weeks? This is fucking cruelty, Nick.
I think that either Hero is part cyborg, or he actually has a whole bunch of ghost artists that help him out. Like, his assistants must be, like, capable of exactly replicating his style or something.
He just grabs...
He turns, he churns out so much, it's ridiculous.
Or he's just grabbing Oda's old fucking manuscripts out of the trash and sketching fucking fairy tale faces
draw
on
draw blonde ponytails over Nami, and there we go.
Good to go. Now, this week we get two chapters, and it starts off with chapter...
Oh my god, so much happens!
I don't even see a chapter title here, so... Oh, there, 429 Code Blue. So I'm going to sum up this chapter real quick, because...
First of all, Virgo, her gate has closed because of the magic seal stones, but Lucy's still in the maid outfit for some reason.
I guess once the magic ends, it just becomes a regular fetish dress. I don't know. Essentially, what we find out from this chapter is that Gray was not actually a part of the guild, and he's been tricking them all along. And the reason I'm skipping over this is because the only other thing of merit in this chapter is weird BDSM fetish jokes and a bizarre...
With a goat.
A bizarre notion of the grandest sexual torture being having your feet licked by a goat. Apparently it'll, like, eventually lick your feet so raw it'll, like, tear the flesh off of you. I can't comprehend how that's, like, considered. Like, I'm sure it maybe is real. Maybe there is. It just feels like a very ineffective torture form.
I'm sure that some animal would actually cause damage to that in a very painful way. I don't know how rough the tongue of a goat is.
I feel like the more terrifying part would be like, oh man, my feet are super ticklish. That licking's gonna make me laughing my ass off.
I love how... Like, he lists all these different things, like, yo, you may be whipped, or, you know, you have hot wax, or waterboarded, or bondage, you know, choose your torture, and she's just like, you're such a fucking pervert. Now she's like, go for the one with licking! That doesn't seem like it'll hurt very much. She's like, yeah, but it's the grossest one! Natsu has a fucking point, though!
What was I gonna say? I was like, hot wax, I mean, not for nothing... There's a lot worse forms of torture out there than having hot candle wax dropped on you. It'll burn for, like, a hot moment, and then it cools off. That's fine.
That's why it's an actual, you know, BDSM fetish, is yeah. Because it is still safe.
Yeah, but, I don't know. Apparently here is, goat licking is the epitome of weird one. Also, there's more foot fetish stuff, so if you hadn't gotten...
And bondage.
Well, yes. I mean, that was obvious, Nick. He introduced a BDSM character for this. I was going to be baffled if we didn't get a scene of Lucy tied up and gagged at one point, which we get several of.
It was so creepy. But, fortunately...
She gets... Yeah.
He's like... He basically just gets so fed up with her because... I'm not sure exactly what happens. I think it's... Oh, Natsu is just like, you know, we're not going to give up on Gray, even though he's mocking them over it. And then he's like, well, fine, torture's over, just going to chop her in half.
And then Gray shows up, freezes the guy solid, and he's like, ugh, you guys ruined everything. And he takes out his magical cell phone, and he's like, hey, Code Red, this is Code Blue. We've got trouble. Huh? Yeah, he's here. Sure, I'll put him on. Natsu takes the phone. He's like, who is this? And then we cut away and we see Urza. And she's like, oh, for pity's sake, you certainly spoiled Gray's infiltration plan, didn't you? Nick, Urza's back! Oh my god.
I'm so shocked that Urza's back. I thought that Urza was never going to show up again.
Thought this year had just been written gracefully out of the series.
I think that we should continue with this habit of having her be quasi-British and just have her be M from James Bond.
Oh, bother. You guys really buggered up Gray's plan, didn't you? Always faffing about. Then we move on. I'm just moving on past that because I need to get into this one to talk about how stupid this collective double-page issue was. Chapter 430, Operation Purify. And I don't know who the fuck's on the cover, and I really don't care. So...
Gray basically gets rid of his curse mark thing, which reveals what you said last week, that of course he did get rid of his fairy tale mark. It's still there.
Yeah, so he has this thing, and Gray basically explains, he's like, look, this was an infiltration plan. I wasn't actually joining Avatar. It was what people were suggesting early on. I infiltrated the guild to find out what they were doing, and I made this plan up with Urza, so, you know, we knew about it. And then they go on to discuss, like, oh, hey, so...
Why doesn't Juvia know about this?
You didn't tell Juvia, and Urza's like, that was my request. And here's her quote. I knew that we would have a greater chance of succeeding if we limited the number of people who knew about this mission.
And that's logical.
No, it's not, because their plan was in fact compromised because they didn't let more people know about their fucking mission.
Well, they weren't to know that people would actually find Juvia.
Well, the Juvia herself could have gone after Gray. I don't get what was the point of being like, no, we can't tell her. One more person knowing the existence of our plan, not even necessarily being involved with it, just knowing about it was too much. Has that fucking idea, that logic, ever worked out in the benefit of the person lying? Ever? Has there ever been a point where someone's like, I'm going to do something that to your perception is going to look like I'm betraying you?
Well, but sure, in real life, that's how that works. If, you know, you go on a fucking spy mission and you're a double agent who goes into fucking Russia in order to pretend to be, you know, on their side just so you can get their secrets and stuff, you don't tell your fucking wife about it.
No, but that's also a different situation. Like, we're talking about, that's a spy guild.
Well, this is a spy mission.
This isn't a spy guild.
Yes, it is. He's trying to discover where the meeting place is.
Nick, we've seen Avatar. They're all fucking goofers. None of them are spy masters.
I agree with most of what you're saying, especially because Juvia has been, you know, evil before, and it would not be very difficult to convince the members of Avatar that she was just going along with it because Gray-sama wants to do this. Mm-hmm. And she could, you know, just do her all whole weird succubus-type stuff that she did whenever she was evil and fighting Lucy and stuff.
Yeah, they had that whole aspect.
At least Urza does say, like, yeah, I didn't know this was going to last so long, so it's kind of a my bad.
They do. They at least acknowledge it. But I just found it weird. It's just like, oh, man, I knew if we didn't tell more people, it would help us out. Like, oh, well, I guess that kind of worked against you there.
So, basically what happened was, the whole stuff with Gray's curse mark showing up while he was staying with Juvia, that actually happened, and he did go off on his own, and he actually found someone who helped him to control it, but then afterward, he didn't go back and tell her. Instead, he worked on this infiltration mission and pretended it was taking over his body, even though it wasn't.
So, and the reason they're doing so is because Urza discovered this guild Avatar during her research for Gerard's group. And in doing so, she's like, we need to have someone investigate. And they did, which was Gray. But they found out that Avatar's plan was to massacre an entire town because they believe that death is inherently related to Xerath. So Xerath will come to where there's death, so they're just going to try to murder as many people as possible. So they had to find out what this Operation Purify is, which is very important, Nick. Operation Purify is key. They couldn't possibly act on them if they don't know what Operation Purify is, which means it must be some kind of fantastic device or incredible magic.
No, it's just an invasion, basically. Well, it does actually make sense, because Natsu actually points out what you would think is a hole in this plan, which is, these guys are basically goobers. Why didn't you and Urza just fucking, you know, destroy them and take care of this in 2 seconds? And Gray says, well, this is just a branch of Avatar. We had to know where the meeting place was before we had to strike, and that meeting time is today. And so now we know where they are, and we can actually act on it. Which means you didn't actually have to let them be in prison and get upset with them for blowing your cover, because you're all just going to do the thing that you're going to do now anyway.
Yeah, it was like today was the day it was going to end. You could have beaten up everybody at the guild, take the rest of your guild, and go fucking screw up Operation Purify.
It's not like the entire rest of their group is any better, because they're like, oh, we're being attacked. Well, who is it? What kind of division is it? It's not a division. It's just one person on horseback and they're just killing everybody. It's like, God, all these people suck.
So Gray apologizes to Lucy. He's like, look, I'm sorry. I was a really big jerk when I was back there. I was, you know, pretending to be one, but I said some really awful things, so I'm sorry. Which is very nice of him. And she's like, I forgive you, and I'm sorry for slapping you. And then Gray responds, but it's really hard to take you seriously with you in that maid outfit. And my immediate thought was like, but they take her seriously in every other outfit she's in? Like, she's in, like, a fetish outfit 90% of the time.
She reveals another one this time. She uses Taro's power, and of course that leaves her in, like, cow bikini top. Like that one character in Gakuhote.
It's a cow bikini top and the Zack Ryder pants, where there's only one fucking, like, leg, and the rest is just bare. But we're getting ahead of ourselves here, Nick. Because we have to cut away to the town of Malva, where Steel Mask Beard and the rest of the members of Avatar, hair guy, girl with stupid nicknames,
creepy voodoo guy.
Yeah, they're all staying around talking about how all of their faithful are here. all of the branches, even those they never knew about, have gathered here for Operation Purify. And she says...
How did they not know about some of them?
I don't know. They're just like, oh yeah, we had fucking charter guilds all over the place. Didn't even know we had a fucking San Diego branch, but here they are. Oh, man. And she says, quote, even if Stripso or the Council should come, they will be powerless in the face of our faith. And I'm assuming Stripso is meant to be gray.
Yes.
Because they've sort of admitted to themselves, like, yeah, I guess we were kind of oblivious to the fact that Gray really was working against us that whole time.
Well, they were already suspicious of
him. Yeah, but they didn't actually act on it until he took out one of their...
Why they didn't do something leading into, like, you know, not trusting him with certain information until he proved himself, it's because they all suck, basically. Yeah.
Well, now because of it, they're without their strongest member, Goatman. So, I don't know what the fuck that guy would have done in this situation. He's just like...
He just, like, carried all of his BDSM devices in with him. That's very heavy stuff.
I just like to think he's flying around dripping hot wax on people's heads. Like, ah-ha-ha-ha! And then, Evil Mask Guy, with his beard on his mask... talks about how we will now perform Operation Purify on the town of Malva. This town has committed no sin. Its 30,000 inhabitants go about their business unaware of their fate. Their unsullied soul will lead him to us, the Black Wizard Zerif. We offer up their 30,000 souls to him so that he may walk among us. Each and every life in this town will be purified.
People that are crossing by on the street are just like, what the fuck is with that weird guy in the mask?
Does this mask have a mustache and beard on it? Who would do that? Made out of steel. Just seems so unnecessary. Does he want everyone to know he has a beard and mustache under the mask? Or is that... Does he not have one and it's just a weird design? It's like, shut up, I'm kidding you. Stop talking. Stop talking.
Fairy Tail basically shows up and kicks their asses, essentially.
He sends his men out, and Fairy Tail shows up, as you said, and they are just absolutely whooping him. And, you know, Natsu even's like, hey, have you upped your game any? And Gray's like, you want to find out afterwards? And Lucy activates Star Dress Taurus, which I just said is like a cow bikini top and a, you know, half leg pants thing. It's actually not as fetishy as I worried it was going to be. I'm actually relatively impressed with the tastefulness of this one.
Yeah, I would have, like, suspected, like, basically, like, cowboy hat and Daisy Dukes and shit, because cow.
Yeah, know? I would have expected her breasts to have grown, like, three sizes or something like that. Like, I don't know, I just heard
milk cow. Yeah.
But the members of the guild are like, Jerome-san, there's an enemy behind us, too! And they're like, what, did the council's army? They're like, no, it's just one night! And Urza, as you said before, is riding through them, just murdering everybody, and all the members of Fairy Tail get talking, like, yeah, let's get started. Let's give them a show. Feels like old times, huh? And there's some lame line. The ones to be purified are you.
We're going to slaughter all of you.
It's just a stupid line. I also got... I don't know why. I know for them it's been a year, but Lucy saying it feels like old times, I'm like, no, it hasn't. You guys were fucking hanging out like 2 months ago. It's not like this is fucking Marineford, where I haven't seen Sanji in, like, 2 years. You guys are always fucking around.
Well, this is... That's just Fairy Tail in a nutshell, you know?
It is. Oh, man. This chapter is... The both of them are just fucking awful. Just just everything that's ever bad about Fairy Tail storytelling. Just easy cliches. I have to think at this point, being evil in Fairy Tail's world is akin to having a mental condition. Like, you are mentally handicapped to be evil in this world. Because every evil person is the dumbest motherfucker on the planet. We have to... you have to be under the assumption that the leader of Avatar, whose name I don't remember, and who cares, because he's going to defeat next week anyway and not leave another impact on the series, he is seen as saying, we have this army of all these people, and they go into it with the confidence... Even if the Magic Council shows up, our forces are so strong, we can beat them. Because that's what they're going in here for. They're saying that. They're saying, even if the Magic Council shows up, we can beat them. So you have to think these guys have an inkling of fucking understanding of how strong the Magic Council is. And yet they're fucking flabbergasted when four motherfuckers show up and just clear house through their whole fucking guild. Like, what is this guy's understanding of his group, of his forces? Was he just like, oh, well, I thought Jeff was stronger than that. Oh, he got punched in the mouth by a girl with a bullwhip.
And it also negates a lot of the potential dramatic tension that we had going into these two chapters. You know, if we had still thought that Gray was evil at this point, then that thing that Gajeel said, you know, where he's like, it doesn't matter if Gray is opposed to me, you know, I'll still do what has to be done in order to protect the game. That might have actually been relevant. The whole thing with Sting. Now it's like, well, how the fuck is that going to come up then if Gray is actually a good guy?
Like, I don't know, like, I'm just expecting a moment where Gray, like, slips and, like, an ice ball flies out and it's, like, flying at Frozen. Like, wait, he was fucking... You were gonna go evil because Gray slipped and accidentally punched your stupid cat in the face? Like, it's just such
that
a
is
way...
the worst reason to ever turn evil. Froge agrees.
I just remember reading it and I was just like, okay, I get it. This was what we all thought was going to happen. Gray wasn't really evil. Why did, like, you'd get the exact same impact from this, you know, double twist swerve if you had done it the first chapter. Like, I don't know why
basically,
we had to go three
yeah.
chapters later of, like, no, he is really evil, guys. No, this time we mean it. He's evil. It's Gray. He's lost control. He's gone to the dark side. And then it's like, boop, boop. No, I'm still cool, guys. But, hey, Urza's going to join up with us. And I sit here and I'm like, so Urza as well is doing fucking nothing fantastic during their year off from Fairy Tail that she couldn't have phoned up Lucy at some point and been like, hey, yeah, things are cool with us, just so you're not fucking miserable and alone anymore.
No, Chris. The less people who know about it, the better.
I don't get it. This fucking time skip has been the biggest waste of time. Nobody has done anything different or fantastic in their year away.
This made more sense when Juvia and Gray were just off in the wilderness on their own, and so nobody knew where Gray was.
Yeah, and they were training, they were doing their own thing. But Urza's gone back to the same shit they were doing when they were a guild. They're fighting the evil guilds. Yeah, she's, you know, presumably working for Garrard or under that same mission, but they were doing that already. I need to find out what fucking Makarov's doing. I need to find out he's been kidnapped. He became Liam Neeson's daughter and got kidnapped by fucking Arabian slavers or something. Liam Neeson just hasn't gotten to him yet. I need something to understand why the fuck that bald motherfucker hasn't just come back and restarted the guild. Because nobody's
Makarov
doing anything.
Like, no, I started up my own guild called Larry Tail. And, see, I'm very busy getting all super muscular, punching the bad guys once, and then getting defeated. It's a full-time gig. I can't come back to Fairy Tail.
Me and Chad started up this sweet guild. Me, Chad, and Ant-Man, where we all get kind of big and strong, punch things once, then lose. We had a very busy schedule.
Oh, boy.
Oh. No, so, like... These chapters aren't, like, bad. They're not, like, offensive. It's just that moment where Fairy Tail's writing just fucking loses all sense of track and scope and just devolves and falls in and crushes itself. And then I sit here and I'm like, I have six more chapters of this in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'm good. I told you way back, not way back, but, you know, back when we covered Fairy Tail as a full thing, that, you know, it's like, yeah, it's stupid, but I don't care. You know, it just, I just accept that it does this stuff and has no sense of pacing or consequence, and things just happen, and it's like, well, that was bad, and then I just move on.
Yeah,
so
we just enjoy something else at that point.
Yeah, I'm just glad that I have this ability to let go of Fairy Tail when you don't. I wish I had this attitude about Bleach as opposed to just like, oh my god, it sucks.
Oh, and that's the thing, like, even though I hate it, I still kind of love it in its own way, because I'm just like, oh, man.
Oh, you stupid little series, get out of here.
It's just like, you did it again. You almost had me. I was kind of getting into this idea that Gray was evil, and how would the group get around this? And then you just turned it on its head, and he's been...
No, especially when the stuff that led into the time skip was actually pretty good.
Yeah, and it was like, and the premise of the time skip was really interesting. Like, oh, Lucy has been spending the past 2 years or past year as an investigative journalist, trying really to make money, but ultimately so that she can keep track of where all of her friends are. And apparently, at one point, she just lost track of the fact that none of them are doing anything interesting.
Yeah, it's just apparently nobody just fucking likes Lucy.
Like nobody.
I actually feel really bad for her. Like they weren't doing anything they could not that they did not have to tell.
It's not like they were like it's not like they were undercover in fucking like Moscow under like Russian supervision at all hours. Urza's been presumably just in a castle somewhere calling Gray every so often.
Like, well, and Gajil and Levy have been with the Magic Council too.
Yeah, they're just like, hey, can I like what's. Alright, I don't want to get into, like, an hour and a half.
Listen, we gotta move on, yeah. Alright. Food Wars, Chapter 115, Breakout. So, Soma has revealed this quail, roast quail thing, which he has referred to as a chicken and egg rice bowl, and everyone's like, that doesn't look anything like it. What are you fucking calling it that? And some people are trying to figure it out, and they're like, "What is it? Just because it's a bird served with poached egg, whatever." So Shiomiya digs in, cuts the thing open, and everyone's like, "Oh man, it looks so good! It smells so good too!" And Shiomiya takes a bite, and we get this like waist up nude shot of him as he's blown away by it, although he doesn't give a verbal reaction, and. Fucking what's her name? Oh well. Ponytail teacher girl bites into it too, and she has a waist up naked shot, although she covers up her naughty bits. And she's like, oh, it's so good! Oh, the wonderful egg and the roast quail and the rice! It's so wonderful and satisfying! And then she, as she's chewing, something crunches in her mouth, and she's like, oh, what was that? And so it goes into a long explanation of how he put the dish together. I have no idea what parts of this are relevant and which parts aren't. It looks good.
Really creamy fucking rice and stuff, man.
Basically, he sums it all up after a full-page explanation by saying, I took the idea of a Japanese chicken and egg rice bowl and rebuilt it using only French techniques. And so everyone is just like, that sounds great! And Lucy's like, I want to try some too! And he says, I'm sorry, I only made the one. Oh! We'll make it for me again someday. And Abel says, well, you know, there's one thing I don't understand. When you stuff a bird, out of necessity, the filling has to remain firm to stay in place. Something soft and creamy like risotto should have fallen right back out. How did you make the filling work? And Ponytail Teacher Girl says, I know, the crunch! And someone says, yes, it's cabbage. I quickly blanched a cabbage leaf, wrapped the risotto in it, and then stuffed it inside the quail. And she says, ah, just like the camp show game. And Lucy punches her in the face. Not Lucy, one of the other teachers. But she also says, yeah, it's the same idea behind the Cho Farsi that Shinomiya made back then. Stole an idea from him. And so Shinomiya is thinking to himself, he blanched the cabbage leaf perfectly, too. He brought out just enough sweetness in it while retaining its crispy texture. And it's that very sweetness that softly ties the fragrant quail meat together with the creamy richness of the risotto filling. And the fucking... the older teacher is like, there are two things that the Institute looks for during the Stagiaire Challenge. The first is whether or not the student gives something tangible and lasting to their workplaces. But the second thing goes far beyond that. After the Second World War, young Japanese chefs went to France by the dozens looking to become professionals. It's thanks to their hard work and unstinting effort that Japan has true French cooking to enjoy. Those brave chefs went into a foreign land and watched legends work up close, learning their techniques, stealing them, refining them, until they finally built a cooking style they could call their own. The true goal of the Stagiaire Challenge is to see if the students can do what those old chefs did. Go to the pros and steal something to make their own. That is so blown out of proportion and amazing. I fucking love it. Going to a pro... Basically, he says that getting a temp job is like going to a foreign country to steal their techniques and bring them back. That is awesome. And so Shinomiya says...
You ever had risotto, Nick?
The only risotto I've ever had is fucking frozen, stick it in the microwave risotto, and it tastes fucking awful. I'm sure if it's, like, prepared freshly and stuff, it's amazing, but I've never had it. So, and I feel bad because, it's like, you know, every time I've seen, like, risotto, like, on TV or in this manga and stuff, it seems way more delicious than the stuff that the crap that I've been shoveling into my mouth.
I feel like, Nick, at some point we need to do, like, another live weekly manga recap, like, where the two of us are in the same place, and I feel like when we do that, we need to have, like, a Shokugeki no Soma cook-off, where we, like, we become master chefs for a moment, and we make the shit.
You're like, I tried to make this thing, I'm not sure how well I succeeded, and I'm like, well, I went for something safe. I went for peanut butter and jelly.
I'm like, wait, he made peanut butter and jelly in the series? I made his fucking peanut butter octopus legs! You're like, Chris, that was a failure in the series when he made it. Oh!
So Shinomiya says, well, not bad, Yukihira. And Soma replies, well, you remember how you said when you came back to Japan, you wanted to come back to your roots to make your French cooking better? Well, if that's what you're doing, then what I need to do is the opposite. I need to break out of the confines of the environment I grew up cooking in. This dish is the first featuring my new Yukihira style of cooking. And so Shinomiya hears this and he thinks to himself as everyone else awaits his judgment on Soma's dish until he eventually turns to someone and says, it's too low quality, it's a no-go. But, he says, that's just as it is. You could probably put it on the menu of whatever low-end greasy spoon you'll wind up running someday, but it is too poor to have a place on a Kojiro Shinomiya menu. Still, I guess I could be generous and show you how I do it if it was my recipe. And someone's like, yeah, okay, do that. And so Shinomiya immediately gets to work and starts preparing the dish his own way, as Soma basically works directly with him as his assistant. And, is it Hinako? Something like that. She says, ah, he's always so prickly. He could have just said, like, I'll give you some advice to improve it. He's going to always be to make that approach. But Lucy says, well, yeah, you know, he did the same thing just like this back in France. Oh, really? Tell me all about it. And Shinomiya pauses to turn around and grab both of them by their faces and lift them up off the ground. I fucking love that. This guy is, like, ridiculously strong, and he's this skinny, tall dude.
Don't take shit from people.
So at the end of it, Shinomiya says, all right, so you've got to head off to another location for the third week, right? Which, I assume this will be the fucking end of this.
It's stagiaire week! For a month!
Really? So he says, it was only for a week, but you did spend time working in one of my restaurants. If you bomb at your next job, that'll cast doubt on the quality of the Shino name. So you better not do that, understood? And someone says, yes, sir! Thank you for everything, Master Shinomiya! And Shinomiya's like, but no, I'm not your master! And I'm like, ah, he called you master. Like, no! No! Shut up! It's so fucking embarrassing. I have loved this set of chapters to see this other side of Shinomiya and see the relationship between him and Soma, you know, evolve like this. And it's really been cool on Soma's end of it, too, because we are seeing a really important character, not necessarily change, but, you know, this realization that he has come to and this evolution of his style and stuff, and presumably that's going to make for some interesting events going into the future. So, I have really liked this.
It was very interesting, and I actually got, we got an email from Tropical Blitz talking about it, and he particularly wanted to know my thoughts on it, because I had a very large gap from when I started reading Food Wars to, you know, where it is now. I basically made it through the first three volumes of the series, and then I've kind of picked it up now. And I guess the opinion online is that a lot of people don't think this was as good as the Fall Classic.
Well, it's very different.
But, so, you know, this is also essentially the first arc. Now, I don't know, because he seems to think it's done. I don't know if we are going to be getting the last week.
Yeah, he might just say, like, and then he passed the third week.
Yeah, it's like, and he went to the third week and fucking made, you know, chicken tenders for a fucking week. And he found out if you could put honey, you can mix marinara sauce with ranch and make ranchinara, and people love it. So that was a tangible thing, and he did that really great. So here you go.
Well, another, another possibility is that maybe we don't focus on someone during the third week, and we focus on another character instead, like Megumi.
Yeah, and I think he notes that in here as well, but the idea being of how was this arc enjoyed in comparison to the Fall Classic as being, even if this isn't the end of it, being at least the story we're getting from beginning to end, as opposed to the Fall Classic where we jumped in right as right. the climax essentially was beginning.
Well, I didn't, but you
yeah, did. But for me it was. I think I enjoy it a lot. I enjoy Shokugeki no Soma Food Wars because it's a series with a lot of passion behind it. And I think that's what kind of, you know, shows up the most when I read it. It's a series that has these strong emotional character moments. I don't know a lot of these side characters, but every time, almost every side character they've introduced, I've come to like because of what we've gotten out of them. Because almost any time one of them shows up, it's not just so that they can be this side thing that Soma bounces off of and he grows. It's usually they come into the story and they have their own character growth because of it. You know, Shinomiya, the secretary from last chapter, you know, everyone I've met almost at this point, I've grown to like because of what we've seen from them. So I enjoyed this little miniature arc series quite a lot.
There's also one last bit that I haven't mentioned. First off, as Soma's leaving, Shinomi actually says, hey, go get the first seat. He basically gets as close as he can to like wishing him luck while retaining his whole kind of prickly personality. And then we cut to days later when Shino's Tokyo restaurant has this big grand opening and Abel is taking an order and the guy says, is there any dish you would suggest? And he says, yeah, there is one that I recommend. And he points out one, which is Garçon de Fronte, quail stuffed with risotto and egg, uppity brat style. Which is amusing, but also it shows, like, you know, Shinomiya, of course, has grown a little softer to Soma. And Abel has as well. And that's, I guess, the payoff, too, is he finally stopped being a douche about it after he finally left. So, yeah, that is Food Wars for this week. Not sure exactly what's going to happen next time, but I look forward to it. And I guess we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do for Gakuen.
I have it loaded on my phone now, so...
You got it. Okay, you want to give it a try?
Yeah, we can do this. Now, I'll warn you all right here. I'm going to be phoning this one in.
Ah!
I did that joke before the show. To
I
Nick
have the same and, reaction. It's just as funny.
And now this is for a third time on the live show itself. But yeah, I'm going to be reading this off my phone, so apologies if it's a little bit slow because I may not be able to read the text as well. But yeah, we'll start this, Nick.
Okay. Do you want me to handle Pine or do you want her?
I think you were Pine before. Okay. I think she's... Yeah.
All right. Chapter 19 of Gakuyote? Whatever, we'll get to that, we'll get to it. Tuesday, July 18th, one day before the classroom session.
Why not? I'm the class's assigned prosecutor. Please let me do it.
You should know why not.
Oh, you kept the voice this time.
Oh shit, my phone went out. This current case is Class A incident. Only top prosecutors from Special Investigation Unit are permitted to handle those. In short... You are not good enough.
Ellipses, exclamation point.
Flashback.
Sick girl!
I know too well that I'm weak, but my friend has been hurt. I want to avenge her myself.
Don't assume that you're the only one who's had friends hurt.
Huh?
Be grateful she is still alive. You are not the only one out for vengeance. Just spend your energy praying for her recovery. Turn. Clatter. Thanks for the info on Class 6-3. Let me know if anything else comes up.
Top, whatever that means.
Top. I think that was her fucking pervy bony bodyguard gaining an erection.
I hate to see her go, but I love to watch her. I actually like this moment from Kojima. Just, you know, a little bit that kind of reminds you that even though she's kind of a bitch, that there is a very good reason for why she acts this way.
Mm-hmm.
Flashback.
Pine half-baked? That's Hanzuki! Was Inugami right all along?
That's you again, actually.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. In short, oh, you're not good.
In short, you're not good enough.
Crunch. I'm so frustrated. More than I've ever been before. At my own lack of experience and ability.
Chapter 19. I'm not afraid. The courtyard, overhead passage. Shiratori was hit in the head with some object and found lying inside that animal shed. The only one with a key was Creature Keeper Tento.
So if a Nanahoshi is not the perp, then whoever did it from a locked door outside without the key. Well, I feel it could have been done using string or wire, but...
But I have concluded the chances of that are low. It was an irregularity that Tento left the shed to chase after that rabbit this morning. Or that morning. Don't you think it a bit unnatural for someone to anticipate that happening and set up a locked room trick ahead of time?
Oh, you think? Sorry, I'm a useless without evidence.
I submitted 3 defense witnesses. The first is Uozumi. They apparently lifted Uozumi's fingerprints off the bat thought to be the weapon used, the one found on the rooftop, though he himself is denying any involvement. That's you.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
There aren't many weapons you can beat someone to death with on the school grounds.
And the other two are Irene and Hatakayama. Tento says he witnessed the two of them rushing off somewhere that morning, that they swore him to secrecy.
Oh, Nanahoshi!
That's it, you're hurt. Well, all that's left is to clear things up during questioning.
Eripsies.
So racist. That's still you, though.
Hey, Abaku. This current incident, do you really think that guy is the perp?
Ellipsis, exclamation point.
Or, put another way, is Red Ogre really in our class?
Red Ogre? The Bloody Session's true perp?
What do you mean? I thought there were only 3 survivors! You, Monkey Dude, and Hot Bondage Girl!
In order to clarify things, I need to tell you more about the Bloody Session first. The topic of that session was to fill the roles for a class production of the play Momotaro.
Okay. Settle.
Teacher said something that's... I don't know if it's just coincidence that the only survivors were those sharing the names with the 3 roles of Dog, Inu, Monkey, Saru, and Pheasant, Kiji. As I told you before, the shock caused all of us to lose our memory of what happened before the incident. The most we remember is a blood-soaked classroom, and likely from a bit earlier, a scene of chaos over who'd play the role of the Red Ogre.
Well, sure, it's not a popular role. Wait, are you sane?
Yeah, I'm betting the student who was forced into playing the Red Ogre impulsively turned to violence and committed the bloody classroom session that day. After we were sent to Onigashima, we began calling him Red Ogre and tried to ferret out his identity from records about our class and the incident. We quickly noticed inconsistencies.
Ellipses!
According to reports, the number of victims was 1 teacher and 35 students. However, that class, 1-2, was a class of 40 including the teacher. So even counting us 3 tongues, that still leaves 1 more. But when we asked the court about the missing student, we were repeatedly told it's unrelated and irrelevant. They refused to make any official announcement.
So that other one person is Red Ogre!
Then there's this email I got earlier this spring. I don't know what whoever sent it is plotting, but since it used the term Red Ogre, which was never publicized, I concluded it wasn't a mere prank and transferred here.
The bloody classroom prep is a classmate of ours?
Bloody classroom prep.
And Shiratori was attacked by this Red Ogre too?
I don't know, but I sure hope so. Wouldn't you rather not have 2 psycho killers in our class? I don't really know yet. All I can say is that I can't see Tento killing Shiratori.
Oh, Tento Nanahoshi, huh? From the moment we met, something's nagged at me about him. Like I felt uncomfortable around him, or rather, that he somehow seems
familiar.
Actually, you said, like, I felt comfortable around him. So that's an important difference.
Oh, like, I felt comfortable around him, or rather, that he seems familiar.
Darn it!
If you're looking for something, want some help?
You got sheet, eh?
Ellipses.
You know,
every character.
Marcus looked more like it's kind of weird when you point out every time characters just say ellipses.
Okay.
Don't keep looking at me with that scary face, Class Prez. Clomp. I don't want to get hit with that electric recorder again.
Too bad.
Shoves it up.
It just fucking knocks
him. Ah, police brutality, no! Don't tease me, brother.
It's not use anymore! We've been summoned witnesses! I bet he knows already! So.
It's still you.
Oh wait, I was this chick too?
No.
It's just suspicious, isn't it?
Don't worry. Just do exactly what I tell you, okay? Ivy.
I probably should actually get a different voice for her. Whatever. I'll have a chance next chapter, I'm sure.
From Red Ogre, I am currently in Tenbin Elementary, Class 6-3. If you want to put an end to that classroom session, come and expose me by graduation. Wednesday, July 19, the day of the classroom session.
Okay, Tento have bird breakfast and ready for session!
He just reaches through the bars.
So hungry. Thank you for delivering food. As this, like, fucking McDonald's breakfast scene outside his cell. They're like, I'm gonna guess this guy's the Red Ogre. You got your hanky? Tissues? Are you sure you don't need me in there, Oboku? You let me know if Kojima bullies you, okay? It's considered bullying if she's bullied, feels like they're being bullied, and...
I'll be fine. Shut up, will ya? My mom or something?
Shoop.
Bam. Hang on.
Ellipses.
Ellipses. Could you go on ahead, Sarutobi?
Oh, you a fucking cock block. I mean, okay.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Ellipses. Shiratori hasn't come to yet. Teacher and her parents are still keeping vigil at her side.
Yeah, it sure is worrisome. Rummage.
What's this? A summary of that day, primarily focusing on the girls in our class, since you don't seem to have much interaction with the girls. Hey, are you questioning my game? Come on.
Yeah, come on, I'm awesome.
I just got so many honeys coming after me and I'm so busy.
Green Pineapple, you. Oh, don't get me wrong. It's not that I want to help you or anything. Come on, Pine. Nor do I really care what happens to Nanahoshi. That's not what you really want to say. But I don't see him as capable of murder. And I want to be the one to bring you down. You have something more important to tell him. Plus, Shiratori's my number one friend, who's been the most kind to me. That's why...
Gotcha. Thanks a bunch. This is really helpful. Later.
Now, go on in, Puppygami. I'm such a fool. Never able to be honest and state my true feelings. Stupid.
Silence!
I love this.
The worst part, that was like right about to hit such a great point in the music too. That was gonna be like spot on for like a moment of build up to finally have him say her name and it's just silence.
Okay.
Hanzuki, no worries. I can tell what you're feeling without you saying anything.
And you got me. I'm counting on you!
Leave it to me!
Sot!
What kind of a salute sound effect is Sot?
Sot! Let's go.
That's actually a really nice scene, too. I really like that.
It is.
Oh, it's such a shame that this is at the end of the series. But I guess it is kind of nice that we do get that kind of moment of closure to their rivalry, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine we'll probably get some more to it, too. I can't read what Tento says. It's way too small.
He says yes-um.
Yeah. Yes-um.
I get inside.
Nana Hershey.
Tonto.
Chirp. Ooh, more food.
Exclamation point. Aren't you scared? Huh? If you're found guilty, you will be sent to Onigashima, the prison school. I should know the name. I was there for several years.
I blocked it out due to trauma.
And will likely be investigated for further offenses as well. You're welcome to cry or shiver, you know. If you are the Red Ogre, I'll mercilessly rip that mask off your face.
Scared? Well, I suppose I am afraid. Actually, Tento, immediately take back that statement. I guess I'm not that scared.
Montage flashback, not gonna quote everything, fuck that.
Yeah, all those messages told me I'm not afraid at all. I have a friend who real good attorney.
Honor! Honor! And to the accused, I hereby call this classroom session to order!
Dong, ding, dong.
To be continued.
Oh, man. I mean, for all the fucking joking around we did, this is such a great chapter. It's such amazing build-up to this.
It's something that... It's going to be hard to, like, just dwell on it one day. Like, oh, man. Like, I don't know why. Like, cross-manage hurt when it left. You know, Barrage sucked when it ended. But for some reason, this one hurts so much more just because I'm like, there's so much to this series. Like, the potential for this series is, like, astronomical. But,
Yeah, like, cross-manage, you know, you got a really good idea of what it was going to be like. You got the same thing for Barrage. But when this series got canceled, it suddenly started introducing all these elements that it was holding back from, hoping to get them out there later. And so it's like, this would have been so great if you'd actually seen them kind of come out naturally instead.
Yeah, and, like, it's such a series that you knew that, you know, if you just see, like, if you've played any of the Ace Attorney games, you're like, I know how epic and complex and huge those later cases can be. And you just sit here, like, if they could have gotten to the point where they had these cases where you just involved Pine, Sarutobi, Kojima, Baku, like, all these different elements, you could have created just insane cases. But I'm at least going to enjoy what we get. And this is somewhat unrelated to this, but it's actually something I just wanted to note. In that last kind of... We're kind of getting to the end of what that jump run had. We already know E-Robot got, like, fucking obliterated off the planet.
Oh, yeah. After like 12 chapters or some shit.
And Tage no... Or
Takugo no Ageya.
Yeah, that's now going to be ending as well. It's been bottom-ranked for a while now. Of the series that recently just came in Jumpstart, Ultra Battle
Rogi's
Satellite...
basically on its last legs.
And Rogi's going... What's interesting to me is that Kagame Game actually looks like it's going to hold on for a while. It's been ranking about the middle for a while, but that's the longest running of the Jumpstart, so I'm actually surprised to see that still holding on.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually are getting three more Jumpstarts coming up very soon as well. I think after the Golden Week break, there'll be three more jumping into the magazine, so...
It's actually quite clear that I think that Black Clover is actually doing the best out of the that
school. Oh, yeah. It's been ranking in, I think, like the top five recently, actually, so it's got a good place in there.
I'm not really sure what it's been doing, because it's, you know, it's not bad, but it's a battle series.
I think it's just, it's interesting enough to get the votes. Like, it just has that premise, and it's got enough writing to it that people are like, I dig this, and I'm going to vote for it.
Well, let's move on to, another good chapter this week. My Hero Academia. So, continuing the battle between Deku and Todoroki, Todoroki actually starts off with a little flashback to a conversation he had with his mother, where she said to him, "That's fine, you're not, dot, dot, dot," and then he just thinks to himself in the present, when did I forget what came after that? And so they're at a really tense moment because Midoriya seems like he's almost out of power because he's hurt himself so much using his burst ability to fight off Todoroki's ice. But Todoroki also seems like he's used up his ice powers too much. So they both charge at each other, and Midoriya actually gets the advantage, like immediately dashes into an advantageous position as soon as Todoroki moves. And so he runs to himself to concentrate. You know, imagine the microwave. Don't explode. Don't explode. And he punches Todoroki in the stomach, sends him flying. And Todoroki only manages to, like, just catch himself instead of getting a ring out. And basically, as Todoroki continues trying to use his eyes to fend off Midoriya, Midoriya points out, you know, you're not only are you slowed down because the ice is surrounding you, but your ice is now weaker, too. And so... meanwhile, while this is going on, some of the people who are watching are like, should I stop the match? Because, you know, it seems like Midoriya is really not going to be in any good shape. And, they're like, no, basically. They're actually pointing out that Midoriya is actually using a very good strategy at this time. And, he's got a lot of guts for trying to implement it because, well, it requires him to, as he does, just constantly use his wrecked arms. Like, at one point, he actually, like, puts his thumb into his mouth in order to crack it enough that he can actually make the motion for him to flick his finger and send out a smash. And Midoriya begins talking to Todoroki as he continues to fight. You know, why are you going this far? You know, why are you just doing it just to meet expectations? You know, I want to be a smiling, dependable, cool hero. That's why I'm giving it everything for everyone. Your experiences, your determination, I can't even begin to imagine what all that's like. But if you become number one without giving it your all, then I don't really think you're serious about denying him everything. And Todoroki flashes back to when he was basically being abused by his father, who was forcing him to practice and go beyond his limits, even when he was just 5 years old, while his mother was trying to protect him. And Todoroki continues to recall, you know, a conversation he had. You know, I hate him. I don't want to be like daddy. I don't want to be a person who bullies my mommy. I don't want to be like that. And in response, she said, yeah, but you want to be a hero, right? That's fine. You're not. And Midoriya is going on, like, you know, that's the difference between us. This is why I have to win. This is why I have to surpass you, because you're not giving it your all. Essentially, like, you know, almost saying you don't deserve to stand at the top if you don't give it your all, which is Todoroki remembers being taken away from his siblings just because he's on a different level from them according to his father, until one day he overheard his mother saying to her mother, you know, sometimes I look at Shoto's left side and I look at him and I hate what I see and I can't raise him anymore and I shouldn't raise him. And when she realized what had happened, suddenly, the next time that he shows up in the flashback, he's got a bandage over his eye, which is where he's get, like, the discoloration. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be a burn mark or what.
I'd guess it's essentially whatever Zuko had in Avatar Last Airbender, that same sort of thing, just burned skin.
But, according to Endeavor, his mother hurt him, and she had the ice powers, so... But Todoroki actually blamed his father for this after he has sent her away. And so he's like, you know, I'm doing this so I can show my father. But Midoriya shouts out, your power is your own! And Todoroki recalls watching on TV as someone gives the speech where they say, quirks are naturally passed from parent to child. However, that's not the only thing that matters. It's not just blood ties. Instead, one must recognize and appreciate oneself. That's what I mean when I say it. And it's All Might on TV. When I say, I am here. And this is the source of, you know, Todoroki's mom saying, you know, you want to be a hero. And she finishes the quote by saying, that's fine. You're not bound by his blood. Decide who you want to become and be all you can be. And Todoroki thinks to himself, when did I forget that? As flame explodes out of him. And the chapter ends with, you know, Endeavor looking all happy that he's finally using his fire powers, and Todoroki says, I thought you wanted to win. So why are you trying to inspire me? Which one of us isn't taking this seriously now? But I want to be a hero, too. As he stands in front of Midoriya, one half of his body's burning, the other half is starting to thaw from the ice. And that's the end of the chapter.
Really good chapter.
That's such a cool picture, too.
It is. The ending is absolutely badass. And this is one of those times, because Bleach has done this all the time, where they put the like the chapter title at the end of it, and you're usually just like, what was the point? Like,
Shoto Todoroki origin is what you just read, by guys.
Well, I liked it here, because it does add, like, a cool element to it, where you're just like, at the end, it's like, you know, here's his name, Origin! Like, and, you know, you've already gotten it. So I get it from that aspect, like, it's almost just a... It's something used to amplify the moment, but because he's not constantly, like, because, you know, it's not being constantly used, it has a bit more...
It stands out, and it's kind of special.
But, yeah, I enjoyed the chapter a lot. I thought the ending was very cool. The flashback was good. I think it's, you know, it's got weight to it. I guess I can kind of see now maybe why Todoroki is this kind of mid-tier enemy for Deku in this. It's still possible that Todoroki could win this, actually.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess it's a bit more obvious now why, I guess, Bakugo, whatever his name is going to be the actual antagonist at the end of this, presumably. Fucking Tetsu comes out of nowhere and wins it. He's like, you got eliminated. Like, I don't know, it's crazy. That's how crazy this is.
Yeah, I quite liked it. And these few chapters that we've been seeing, you know, with this tournament stuff, it is, the cool thing has been, you know, getting to know this cast beyond Midoriya and seeing what makes them tick and showing that, you know, they're not just guys. They are kids who want to be heroes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we got that from Uraraka and showed her determination, and now we've gotten it from this guy, Todoroki, and he seems really cool now, so. Alright, though. pretty sure we're on Toriko now, right?
Yep, we have no One Piece, so we skip right over that and we go right into
Toriko. This is such a fucking weird chapter.
They're all weird, but yeah, this one still, like, manages to stand out.
Gourmet 320, Taste of the Food Treasure. So, Toriko's like, oh, look, my cells are all excited in my severed arm. And so he's like, okay, bleh. His hair vomits out Toriko's arm. He's like, think fast, Toriko.
My hair's going to vomit out your arm. What? I don't know how to process any of that sentence.
They're like, oh, look, the cells are attracted to it like a magnet. And just start going, and Gumatsu uses his resurrection magic. Like, and there you go. Okay, good. My arm is good.
So weird.
And they're like, oh, hey, look, a pear fruit. It's slowly dripping into that bowl we sent under it. And they're like, oh, it's so slow. And we've got like 5 billion apes here from all over the continent who want to eat it. So how long is it going to take to just get even one person to enjoy it? And then Kaka, the real Kaka, because you can see her mouth, shows up and says, well, I'll tell you, it takes approximately 2 hours to amass enough pear for one person of approximately 180 grams of the fruit, if required through natural dripping. Multiply that by 5 billion for the 5 billion people present, and it will take 10 billion hours, or 1,141,552 years. And since so many of these apes are rather large in size, you can estimate that they'll need 200 times as much. In other words, a total of 200 billion years. And you're just like, oh my god, it's Kaka! And Zephyr starts attacking her.
I love how Zephyr's just like, punch!
And then his hand passes through her, and like, it didn't work. Oh, okay. And Komatsu says, she's on our side. Huh? Oh, you're the real Kaka, the flavor of okay.
This is starting to make more sense.
Komatsu says, yes, I don't remember much from when I was asleep, but I do remember one thing. In the spirit world, it was without a doubt Kaka who taught me how to capture pear. And Toriko's like, oh, and that's how you taught me, yeah. And Kaka says, all right, yeah, I've told Komatsu the true method to capture pear, and now I will teach you the true method to prepare pear. But first, there's much I need to explain about my current situation. It should take about an hour and a half. No, just explain to us how to prepare pear.
I do love that, like, Toriko is like, don't care, want to eat.
Do it while we're preparing the fruit or some shit. Very well. In order to extract soup from the pear sphere, first you need a bigger bowl. Then stir pear in it for 5 hours. 5 hours! Then immediately dry it out in the sun for 10 hours. Then beat it continuously for 25 hours. What, 25 hours worth of... Yes, and then you must watch it for a full day. Watch it? Yes, without blinking. After that, you must boil it for a week and then dry it once more. What the fuck is this? Well, you know, it's a food treasure. You know, it takes a lot of processing. And there's even more after that. They're like, I'm hungry!
So I'm just gonna eat it.
So Komatsu then looks and he's like, hey, there's a hole in this fruit. And Chaka's like, what are you talking
about? Throw it away, it's not good.
It's bruised. He's like, no, see, it's here in this spot. And he just pokes at this one spot with his knife. And immediately, juice just comes flooding out of it, pouring everywhere. And they're like, oh my god, it's everywhere! And Kaka's like, what the fuck?
Bitch, you made me look stupid.
It's like, not even we flavor hermits who have devoted ourselves to cooking for all eternity knew that preparation method. And that just told him how to do that.
Feels almost kind of cheap.
Oh, alright. And they just start gathering up bowls and they're like, alright, let's drink pear! And they start passing out bowls to all the apes and so on. I do not think that there are actually 5 billion fucking apes there.
I don't think you could possibly draw the... Like, even, like, as minuscule dots, you could draw enough to capture the scale of 5 billion apes.
That crowd you can see, maybe 5 billion ants, not 5 billion apes. Also, one of them has 4 arms and there is a boxing glove on each arm. They're like, all right, you guys ready? Okay. Just like in ancient times, the entire continent will feast. Bottoms up. We give thanks for this world's bounty. We humbly partake of food treasure pear. And they start fucking drinking the fruit. And Toriko drinks it, and immediately both of his arms get really demonic and buffed up. And he's like, oh my god, they're awakened at the cellular level. But what is this? I don't get it. This way of perceiving sensation is like I've become a completely different being. I have a new way of seeing. A new smell, sound, touch, and taste. I've opened up a whole new door to experiencing flavor. Komatsu, you're getting this! He looks over and Komatsu's got boobs.
Not only does Komatsu have boobs, he has a splendid rack that for some reason is completely devoid of nipples.
Yeah, like at first it's like, you know, discretion shots because he's holding the bowl up and so he's covering them. But he just like lowers them and his scar is covering one maybe. But then the other is just right there. So unless that nipple is just on the very bottom of the boob, then no. He's got no nipples.
He doesn't have any.
You could have just put a shirt on him and you would have avoided this problem, guys.
I like the notion that it's like, yes, Pear will turn you into the opposite gender, but like the Barbie doll version of them. So even if you turn into a dude, you still don't got nothing down there.
And they're like, oh my god! And they look around, it's like, everyone in the group just has boobs now. Kaka's like, yeah. Got to mention, when you drink a certain amount of pear, its mysterious flavor can turn your body to the opposite gender and reveal new senses of taste. Food treasure pear is called the double-sided drop, after all. They're like, ah! They're crushing their bodies, and Sunny is like, my dick's gone!
I just wanted Sunny to be like, oh, fuck, the fucking gender bending's the worst part of the Tomb of Fucking Horrors. I hate this.
Kaka's like, yeah, it's okay, though. You know, if you have one more mouthful, you will return to normal, so don't worry. But more importantly, two sides does not only refer to male and female, there's also life and death, meaning that right now, you should all be able to see the spirit world. This is the back channel. Look around. The people of the past civilization have gathered here. And then Toriko is like, I know that guy!
It's so, like, here's the thing. The chapter in and of itself is funny to me. Like, I get it. People are like, this is really silly and stupid, but honestly, I feel like that's always been Toriko, so I really can't, I can't blame the series for that. The thing that's weird to me, though, and that I hold on to, is, like, the notion to, like, oh, we're all chicks, look at their tits, we don't have any balls, oh my god, and then, like, the next page is like, oh, and you can all see everybody who's died.
That is a more important detail.
I was like, it's just, like, such a mood whiplash, like, oh my god, we're all chicks, what? And it's like, oh yeah, and here's your dead grandma. Oh, Sonny! You're just like, aw.
Nice titties, son.
nice melons there. Nice hooters. Grandma, stop calling my titties hooters.
It's so weird that they are put on, like, the same level. God. Alright. Let's move on and finish up with World Trigger. Chapter 100, Komurakami, Part 2. Murakami is facing off against Yuma, and they recap how Kumagai has been eliminated, and they were like, oh, maybe, you know, Yuma will cross over. Nope. He was just, you know, waiting for Murakami to finish up so that they could square off against each other. And Tachikawa analyzes, Murakami knew that Kuga was waiting for him through radar. He must have thought that Kuga would jump back into action like at the bridge. That's why he let go of his ray gust and turned his back. Murakami lured him in so he could counter. So, Yuma, I guess that was a trap for Yuma, and he didn't take the bait. So they're like, so, did he know what Murakami was planning? Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. But this time, it seems like he's going to face him head on. Meanwhile, Nasu is fucking shooting at everything. Like, on the opposite bank, like, everyone is constantly under this cover of her Viper. It is Viper, right? It's called? Or Bullets thing? I think it is.
Yeah, I believe so.
So they're just kind of recapping the action, and Jin points out how Osamu has positioned himself on the opposite side of Natsu so that all three of them have her surrounded, and so she has to split her attention. And he's, you know, occasionally attacking from behind so that he can distract her just to draw her attention a little bit, but he has to make sure she doesn't turn her full attention on him, and also has to make sure that she doesn't somehow strafe around him so that all three of them are within her range at once and she can more easily deal with them. And, just, you know, just kind of, like, establishing the situation. And that's really all that happens, because the only other action of note is that, what are they called? Kuruma and Taichi?
Taichi, I think you're right, yeah.
Yes!
I think I'm proud of you. I feel like we could stick with stupid sniper hat guy, though.
Right. So Kuruma and stupid hat kid, they group up and they put their shields together into this dome so that they can guard themselves from all directions against Nasu's birdcage technique. And then they return a fire and they're like, "Oh wow, you know, Agent Betsu Yaku." God, what a stupid name. Disabled his bagworm in order to just work together with Kuruma, and the double shield is holding up against the Viper. This is a plan, using firepower and numbers. So Natsu sends another barrage with her Viper, and it seems like it's going to surround them again. So they're like, okay, it's fine, you know, we're covered from all sides. But instead, at the last second, all of the bullets converge and just burst through the shield. And so neither of them actually get eliminated, but it does definitely catch them off guard. So, just goes to show, yeah, it's not going to be that fucking easy in order to take her down. Let's see. Osamu continues to, you know, provide distraction and stuff using his asteroid, and eventually Nasu is, like, being bombarded from both sides at once and has to summon a shield, although she seems to be dealing with it pretty well. And, so, Jin says, you know, she's not even blocking them, let's see. She wasn't even blocking them before. It's probably to keep Suzunari alive, but if Four Eyes attracts her attention too much, she'll backfire. If Nasu changes her mind, she'll figure out there is no sniper cover.
What's Chika doing then?
Then we cut to Yuma and Murakami, and for a while they just have this long exchange, and eventually we get to a point where Yuma kind of flips, puts his feet against the wall, and Suzunari... Murakami immediately notices that he's using vole claws, like spikes in his feet to dig in, and then a blade comes through the wall in order to lash out at him, but he manages to jerk his head out of the way. Then he tries to attack from the other side by like kicking. It gets blocked, so he just shoots the blade out and tries to attack him that way, and Murakami again dives, and he was like, well, shit.
Well, I'm out, fuck, out of luck.
So Yuma gets himself some distance, but as he flies away, he gets slammed into this wall behind him. Murakami throws his ray gust, which pins Yuma to the wall, and Yuma only barely, like, tears himself away before Murakami can basically decapitate him. And so Tachikawa, you know, analyzes, man, I can't believe he survived, but, you know, Yuma's basically one of the few people who can actually do that. And so... he points out, you know, Kazama has used mole claws sometimes. Kitora has been using leg blades nowadays. And those things split inside the body to make them look like multiple blades. He's skilled and he uses his tools effectively, but they're still lightweight. That's not enough to reach Murakami when he's in the zone. His sword is heavy with past experience in battles against his most formidable rivals. basically, not only does Murakami have that past experience against Yuma to help him to boost his abilities to give him an advantage, but because Yuma is using techniques that Murakami is familiar with from other better fighters, he's seeing through them really easily, which is a great indication of his capability. It's not just if he fights you a few times, he'll know how to beat you. If you are at all close to someone he's fought before, he's still got the advantage on you.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes him seem so much cooler.
He is, and he seems like a pretty cool rival. Although Nasu seemed pretty awesome herself, the fact she's fighting, like, what?
Three people at once.
Yeah, three people. In her mind, she thinks she's fighting four.
Right. So Yuma's like, oh shit, he's a learning ability. So Tachiko turns to Jin and says, you can see Murakami winning, right? And but Jin says, well, the odds are in his favor for sure, about 80-20, but the future is not set yet. I bet that Yuma will win. With all that he's lived through, the past weighs heavily on his blade too. And we get a little silhouette of his father behind Yuma as he prepares for battle still. It's a cool image to end on.
It is actually cool. And I was talking to this...
Oh, and also replica's there behind him, too.
Yeah, you do see a little replica, which is kind of sad in its own way. But I was talking to a friend of mine about this. I have a friend, the one who actually got me into manga. I got him into reading World Trigger, and he mentioned, he's like, yeah, I mean, I like it, but Yuma's just so nonplussed about everything that it's kind of tuning me out. And I was like...
chapter are you on, first of all?
Well, he's at the point where it was, like, nothing but duck faces still. And I messaged him, like, hey, you know, stick with it, because what will eventually happen is you get to a point where Yuma does get challenged, and you stop seeing that arrogant side of him so much, so that when he does actually finally get challenged, or he does actually finally show off again, it gets really cool. And, you know, it's basically the same week that this happened. I was like, yeah, this is kind of a perfect example of this. This looks awesome because we're not getting Yuma being a badass all the time. You know, we're actually seeing this now. We're a moment where he's going to get really serious, feels big and cool.
But yeah, that is, I think, going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap. Some good chapters this week, but it was really weird to have it be from fewer series. Let's see here. That's kind of it. Let's sign off.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/Reality, although sometimes circumstances force us to change stuff up, so follow us on Twitter for updates. He is at Reality, and I'm at YRollerOfTime, and we'll tweet out when the show starts. Also, be sure to check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com and on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe and leave a review so that we can beat those woodworking assholes. Any reviews to take note of this time?
I'll check it in just a second. I forgot to pull that up, so let me do that.
That's all right. Be sure to send your criticism, questions, and suggestions either in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address to send all that crap to.
All that crap?
All that stuff.
It's all of it's treasured. Yes, we do actually have one here. We actually have two. From Night's Ending, says, like the title says, it's awesome sauce. Listen to it and fall in love. And also from Stereo Spacey, I've listened to this podcast for the last 3 years. That's from my freshman to senior year of high school. And with so much changing, it was great to know that I could always come back to this podcast.
I hope that, like, 12-year-olds don't listen to us do this because we get into some weird shit.
For a brief moment, I thought people for the United Arab Emirates were trying to message us, but then I realized it was just one of those spam emails that just... Yeah, I was like so excited at first. But sadly, it wasn't them.
Okay. Special thanks go out to Steve Mann, our title card artist. You can check out his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com, iDrawBoobs.tumblr.com, and patreon.com/SteveMann. And special thanks as well to the visual edition creators for our podcast, The Infamous Planet and Felix Dark 2. Chris, what series are we going to cover coming up next?
Yes, we have here... Let me just get the name. This is from Arrow Zord, and the series we're going to be talking about is...
First off, that's an awesome name.
Yes, and the series we're going to be talking about is called... It's got a couple different names, but I guess the easiest English name is called... A Certain Scientific Railgun.
Oh, boy. This is going to be interesting.
But it's also known as Tuaro Nagaku no Railgun.
Well, this is going to be weird because that's actually, like, two series.
Oh.
Because there's also Tuaro Majutsu no Index.
Oh, do you want to do both, or I was just
this might be another what do you call it, Higurashi problem. We'll have to fix. Okay, those of you who understand the series, tell us which parts we actually need to read. Thank you.
Okay, so someone shoot us a message. How do you read this series? You need to make it very clear what you're explaining to. And just tell us what order we need to read this stuff and how it will go. But I'm looking forward.
It'll take us some time, though, from what I understand. Because this series has been around for a while, so I assume we've got a lot to read.
It says there's at least 8 volumes of this one, but I figure since we're going to be...
If there are other series, then who knows?
Yeah, and we're also going to be... I think it's 2 weeks coming up soon where we're not going to be getting any Bleach or any Jump, so... We'll give this a shot. We'll see how this goes. If it turns out I've done fucked us again, we'll fix something else up. But I feel like we can give it a try.
We'll figure it out. We can be flexible.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what we're gonna jump into.
Awesome. Okay, and that's gonna do it. So yeah. Bye, everyone. I don't know. Why are we gonna sign off this time?
Do we want to plan out the recipes we're gonna make when we do our live weekly manga recap Celebrity Chef Challenge?
Wait, celebrity?
Yeah, I'm going to get Pendulette, and I figure you could probably get one of the members of 98 Degrees. I'm not really sure if they count as celebrities anymore, but I have to imagine one of them is hanging around Florida somewhere.
Just, like, find one of the people who wasn't famous enough to get on the 20th season of Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, it's... Fucking Michael Sam made on that fucking season. I'm like, you didn't even play in the NFL. You were a practice squad member your entire career. Your career, quote unquote, that lasted a year.
Oh, God.